Today's Teisho will be on Case 39, A Mistake in Speaking. A monk said to Umon, "The brilliance of the Buddha silently illuminates the whole universe." But before he could finish the verse, Umon said, "Aren't those the words of Chosetsu the genius?" "Yes, they are," answered the monk. "You have slipped up in your speaking," Umon said. Afterward, Shinshin Zenji brought up the matter and said, "Tell me, at what point did the monk err in his speaking?" Umon's comment: if you clearly understand this and realize how exacting Umon was in his method, and what made the monk err in his speaking, you are qualified to be a teacher of heaven and earth. If you are not yet clear about it, you are far from saving even yourself. Mumon's verse, a line is cast in the rapids. The greedy will be caught. Before you start to open your mouth, your life is already lost. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming. It was wonderful last night to see some of you arrive. And I was noticing as people came into the Zendo. And it's, you know, personally exciting for me to see people come to Sashin. I feel somebody who runs a bakery, right? And I have these pastries, and I'm waiting for somebody to come and eat the pastries. And the pastries are zazen, obviously. When people come and go, "Oh, what delicious pastry!" You know, I'm very happy. You know, zazen has helped me a great deal in my life. I can't really describe how wonderful it's been. I'm happy to see other people enjoy it also. It's really like a deep sharing, you know, really a beautiful experience for me. I have had a really good sesshin, and I have to tell you, day one I came, and probably like many of you, I was a little bit harried, you know. I had on Friday to try to get all my, I'm an English teacher, so I had to get a bunch of my papers graded because they're due on Tuesday. So I worked really furiously trying to get these papers graded. Sometimes I think I worked harder grading the papers than some of my students worked on the papers, you know. But still, I have some students who are really wonderful, and they're all wonderful in their way. Don't get me wrong, but some of them didn't work that hard. I worked very diligently on Friday and Thursday also, trying to get everything ready for the sesshin, and then I had a bunch of meetings on Monday. And then I graded papers also over the weekend, you know, so that's the English teacher's life. So I worked really hard Thursday, Friday. We had a Saturday sit on Saturday. We had a lovely lunch at Thai Basil, delicious. And that was a very lovely day. And then I went home and I had to do some report. I had to do a report that was due before I left. So you get the idea. Grading papers, doing report. I had a bunch of meetings. And then on Tuesday, you know, I have to, you know, not that I mind, but I have to do grocery shopping. I have to do all this stuff getting ready for sesshin. And so, you know, coming down here, I was trying to remember if I'd forgotten something at work or if I'd forgotten something for the sesshin. Sometimes I've forgotten things, you know. One time I got down here and we didn't have any umeboshi or any pickles, you know. The umeboshi is the dried plum that we use for dried plum tea, and it has quite a good therapeutic property. It's the most alkaline food known to humans in the world, really. It's the most. So apparently, when you dry plums like that, they become alkaline, and they and we make tea out of it, and it settles people's stomachs. When I was training, I used to drink it, and it would just be make my stomach so calm. So it's like magic. And then the pickles, we need those to clean the bowls. So I remember once forgetting those, and I called my wife up, and she FedExed the pickles. And really? And, like, thank God they're here, you know. So I always forget something, you know. Either on my work, I must confess, on Wednesday I called my secretary, and we went through the emails because I was waiting to get, you know. So this is life. Right, this is life, and yet, you know, it can become so all-consuming. You know, it's just this relentless, this relentless tasks to do, and they never stop. And in fact, you know, you can have a lot of joy in doing your work. You know, I actually enjoy my work, but you know, if I just did nothing but work. After a while, it would get stale, and also, it would be hard to be fresh, to have new ideas, and I just think I would get really burned out. I have a job where it's possible to get a little bit burned out, you know. So coming to Sashin for me is a wonderful experience. It's like purifying body, heart, and mind, and it's so renewing. So I'm not boasting or something, but driving down here, I had a lot of stuff on my plate, and when I got here, I like everybody else, I think, you know, boy, I've got a lot of stuff on my plate. You know, this is and I might even feel a little guilty, you know, because I'm taking time off to come to Sashin. I could be doing this. I could be doing that. As soon as I get here, I feel better because I've had so many wonderful experiences here. And when I see all of my Dharma brothers and sisters, all the people I practice with, my friends, I feel happy, you know. And then day one is a challenge, you know, for me. I sit there and at times, I have to confess it's not like it used to be, but sometimes I will think, you know, about this deadline or this, you know, why did he say that? Or, you know, so I too spend day one sort of sometimes going through events of my busy life. Day two though, like everybody else, you know, my legs get tired. I begin to feel, really getting tired by the end of day two. The last sit of the evening on day two is a challenge for me too, you know. I'm in there doing Gokusan and I want to be on for everybody. I want to pay attention. It's very important to be focused. And yet I'm often tired, you know. Day two, sometimes I'll go to bed and I can't wait to get to sleep, you know. This time I didn't do that. I actually did extra zazen. Stayed up on day two and did an extra hour of zazen. And when I got up on day three, all I can tell you, and this is the truth, you know, the truth, is that it was so beautiful. It was like everything was sacred, alive, moving, beautiful, and my heart was just like pumping compassion, you know. In the afternoon on the third day of my sashin, I was thinking about my old friend Larry Sullivan, And I realized what a good friend he was to me. You know, we were college buddies and we went hiking and I was his best man at his wedding, but over time we kind of lost touch. And I felt so sorry about that, and I realized how much I loved him. And I almost was going to call him yesterday, just on my. But then I thought, well, I'll wait until Monday. But I'm going to call him on Monday, and just say, "I love you, man." You know, and he's going to go, "What the hell? I haven't heard from you in 20 years. You know, you crazy guy." But it's all right, you know. I realize I really want to try to rekindle my friendship with him. You know, well, I feel, you know, I felt like, what the hell did I? Why did I let him slip away? You know, he was such a beautiful human being, and he certainly, you know, why did I do that? You know, how callous of me. You know, and I have to say, you know, I've been on the other end of this too. You know, when Dokusan people will come in on the third day of Sesshin, and they'll say, you know, one guy long ago, you know, he had. You know, he had a difficult upbringing, and his father, you could say, was like an abusive parent, and he came into Dokusan, and he was just sobbing, and he said, I was mean to my dog, you know, I was mean to my dog, and I just thought, you know, Sesshin is like a miracle, right? You know, because it's so easy to be hard-hearted. You know, we don't live in a particularly compassionate society. We just don't, you know. There are societies where people are compassionate, more compassionate than ours. It's just a fact, you know. I was just reading this book, a wonderful book called The Spirit Level. And they were looking at societies around the world where people have the highest levels of mental health and happiness. And those societies tend to be very equal. There's not huge gaps between rich and poor. People are pretty much all equal. And so there's a lot, high degree of levelness in the society. And also, there's a great deal of community, closeness, and those sorts of things. And believe it or not, the country that scores highest on most of those measures is Japan. Japan has a lot of problems, but it's a very equal society, and they actually have very low rates of mental illness, and they have the longest life expectancy. So, you know, guess what's on the other side, you know? No, but it's very important, you know, the United States is at the other extreme of the developed nations. We're the most isolated. We have high rates of mental illness and disorders like anxiety type disorders and we also have one of the highest rates of child mortality. You know. So it's like the unequal and the equal, and they have a continuum. You know, there's countries in the middle, but we don't live in a very compassionate society. And you know, as I drove to Sesshin, I was listening on the radio to the news of the war, and you think, wait a minute, which war? You know, all my life America's been at war. You know, Vietnam. We were at war in Nicaragua, basically. We were at war with Iraq. You know, we are in war in Iraq, Afghanistan. So, you know, it's subtly, you know, it's possible to live your life and be rather happy, but there's like you're working in a system which isn't particularly healthy for you. And so it's very good, you know, to come to Sesshin. And you can, I think that what we create here really is like a mandala, right? This is like a sacred space where we can be sane and we can be compassionate and experience life in a different way. And, You know, if there's enough mandalas, maybe the society will change. But you know, I think it's very difficult to change a society from the top down. I think that doesn't work very well. You know, people have to have a different heart. And so, you know, when you come to Sesshin, even though you have to push away all the busyness and all the craziness to get here, you know, I think around day three, you're going to feel a lot better. You're going to be a lot happier. And yesterday, for me, was just like heaven. It was just like being absolutely in heaven. And as I say, I was, you know, everything, sound of a bird was almost heartbreakingly beautiful. And I was thinking about my friend Larry and what a jerk I was not to keep in touch. And I really am going to call him when Sesshin is over and tell him I love him. And he really won't know what to do with that, you know. But I should not, you know, I realize, you know, I realize that life is very precious. It's here and then it's gone. And everybody around us is very precious, you know. And that recognition is very much about what Zen is about. Experiencing your connectedness to things, the preciousness of the people in your life, and so, you know, that's a successful sesshin, you know, basically. That's Buddha mind, you know, is that loving kindness mind. And then the question is, you know, how to integrate that with our daily lives and go back into that crazy society. But this is really like a mandala. What we create here, is a mandala. And people come and they're transformed by it. You know, people who come here have good intentions. You know, people who want to be better people, come to Sesshin. People who want to change their lives come to Sesshin. And Sesshin is like a big machine for purifying body, heart, and mind and producing Buddhas. Buddhas are people who are capable of unconditional love for other human beings. And that is the goal of our practice. So it's not, as I've often said, the goal of our practice is not just Daikensho. It's not just Daikensho is like the first awakening to a different kind of mind. You know, the first dramatic awakening to this different kind of mind. And then basically it's from there we keep going back to that beautiful radiant awareness, sesshin after sesshin after sesshin, and we keep integrating more and more, hopefully, of our life into the mandala. And it can't be done by one person. It has to be done, you know. I'm one of the other things I was thinking about during Sesshin yesterday was I was at such peace and I felt so happy and I felt like the deepest kind of peace, like the deepest kind of, like I was being held in the arms of my mother or being held in the arms of the universe, and there's no way I was going to drop, you know. And I thought, you know, I used to feel that way when I was sitting next to Genki Roshi and Glenn. That, you know, I have some of the best, in fact, you know, I just thought, those moments were so beautiful where I was just sitting in the Zendo next to my two teachers. And I felt so, I think in my life I've rarely felt so happy and so safe and so connected to things, you know. There's a few other times in my life where I've had that feeling to the same degree. But you know, Sesshin is really special. I think that is reality, you know, personally. I mean, there are people who would hear me say all this and think, well, this is crazy, you know. It's dog eat dog, blah, blah, blah. And those people often are in powerful positions in our society. But nevertheless, you know, I think that they're in an illusion, you know, and that the reality is this beautiful connectedness, this beautiful this sense of being at home in the universe, being at home in the world. And And yesterday, I felt this very powerfully for hour after hour. And this is why I like Sesshin so much, you know. And it really will help me to go back and be a better person in my life and value the people I care about and value the people I haven't cared about and remember them, you know. So this is really beautiful. And if you ask, you know, how does it happen? You know, how does this happen? It's really complicated. You know, how does this transformation happen? But I think one of the key elements is that you're not processing information with your small mind. See, this is very important. You know, not processing with the small mind. There's a mind which is a judging mind. You know, it's a judging mind. And it has expectations about what should be the case. And I have this mind too. That's why I come to Sesshin. You know, the Dalai Lama is far, I'm quite sure the Dalai Lama is far in advance of me in his practice. I would guess. But the Dalai Lama still gets up every day and does 4 hours of meditation every morning. And he's actually been increasing it. It used to be like 3. You can say, well, what the hell? He's the Dalai Lama. You know, why does he need to meditate? But, you know, the Dalai Lama has been in negotiations with the Chinese, and they've been very difficult to work with, the mainland Chinese. And they're trying to basically get him over a barrel, and he's been fighting for 30 years for his country, to save his country and his culture. And, you know, even the Dalai Lama must have to do a lot of zazen in order not to get down in the dumps, you know? Because, you know, you would be crazy, in a certain sense, you know, not to be alarmed sometimes by things that go on in the world. I mean, if you were always just like in a state of bliss, you know, you know, that would be kind of weird, wouldn't it? I mean, if you were just like, you know, a nuclear bomb just blew up a city. Oh well, you know, it's all illusion. That would be weird, I think, and not healthy, and not truthful, and also not awake. So I mean, suffering of people is real suffering, and being aware of it is part of being like awake, you know, because we suffer and we don't want to. You know, we don't like to suffer, and in fact, if you meditate long enough, you become rather hypersensitive to the suffering of others. You really don't want them to be unhappy, you know. So you know, being honest about the state of the world is part of living this path, you know. Being, you know, it's not a healthy world, you know. It's not a so it can be overwhelming. If you don't have tools and if you don't have resources. And one of my resources is Zazen and also Sesshin. And I come here and I find this like indestructible compassion where I would least expect it, you know, in myself, you know. And, you know, I'm just, one of the things I was thinking about the other day was what a jerk I was when I was a teenager, you know. I was a really, kind of a big jerk, you know. And I realized, boy, I don't think I would have liked myself very much if I ran, you know, if I could run into my teenage self, I would think, ugh, you know, what a creep, you know. So I'm glad I'm not that person anymore, you know. Anyway, I also though can look at that person and you know, with a, you know, a sort of like loving heart even, you know. Well, the point is that this is my way of dealing with life, is to come here and get in touch with this compassion. And even though I started my life as kind of a jerk, this compassion is present even in me, you know, I'm happy to say. And that's a real surprise, and a really great gift, undeserved gift. So when I sit on the cushion, day three of Sashin, and this boundless love and compassion arises, you know, that's really wonderful. And everything becomes like golden, like this beautiful world has become so precious. And this is a Buddha mind. And it's so wonderful to be able to share it with others. And you need a structure like Sashin. And you need, it helps to have people you can share these experiences with, you know. What gets in the way, though, often is that little mind, that judging mind that has expectations and that is kind of like a cynical little mind, sort of a embittered little mind, or just a judging mind, you know. Strangely, your beautiful mandala can be destroyed very easily if you fall back into that consciousness. It's very interesting, you know, how quickly the universe melts back into samsara if you fall back into the judging mind, you know. This is going to happen, you know, it happens, you know. You have a wonderful sit, and then basically want another wonderful sit just like that one, and it doesn't happen, and then you think, well, this is crap, you know, or I'm no good, you know, and this, why can't I have another sit? And then you get bummed out, and by the end of the day, you're really in a very negative state of mind, you know. And you think, how did I get from paradise to hell in about 6 hours? And there's a mindset which wants, you know, the beauty of Sashin is that you come to Sashin, and by about day two, all you care about is just surviving, right? It's like, you might come to Sashin thinking, I want enlightenment, I want to be the Buddha, blah, blah, blah. By day two, it's just like, let me just get through the next 5 minutes, you know, without shrieking or without crying, you know. And you go deep into your breath, and you go deep into Mushin, into Shunyata. And this is very purifying, because after a while, you know, you're no longer attached to any kind of outcome. You're just present in the moment with a kind of spotless mind. And then everything comes alive. Everything comes alive. But the minute we start measuring and expecting and caring and comparing and so on and so on, our paradise falls apart again, you know. And it's a different mindset, you know. Strangely, the mind that is able to experience wholeness is the mind that can accept imperfection. Isn't that interesting? That the mind that is most capable of experiencing wholeness is the mind that is most able to embrace imperfection. Imperfection. In other words, when you're in that state of discriminating mind, you have all kinds of likes and dislikes and all kinds of expectations. And when things don't go your way, you get disappointed, angry, self-loathing arises, fear. When you're in the second day of Sashin mind, all you care about is getting through the next 5 minutes, and you're just in the moment, in the moment, in the moment. And then, you know, there's a certain mentality where anything that arises is part of a greater whole, and you feel it in your bones, you know. This is experiencing the world through like samadhi, you know. When this morning somebody was breathing kind of heavily in the zendo, and about four people came up and said, "Was it me?" And I said, "I don't know, you know." So somebody was doing it, right? Another, I also said, "Don't move." And somebody came up, about three people came up and goes, how did you see, you know, or, you know. So. But you know, if you're in the right state of mind, and if you're in the right state of mind, even if you're sitting next to somebody who's going, you know, even that can be beautiful, you know, even that can be deeply touching, you know. Now I'm not, if you're not at that state, I'm not criticizing anybody, but there's a kind of a mind which isn't a judging mind, you know, it's an embracing mind. There's a different kinds of intelligence, different kinds of awareness. There's a kind of awareness which is an embracing awareness. And it's not self-centered. It's not anchored. It's flowing, you know. And then there's a mind that is so hard to get out of without zazen, you know, which is the judging mind, you know. And by the way, we're generally the harshest judges of ourselves, right? In other words, even though other people might bother us, typically the person we like the least is ourselves. You know, there's a wonderful saying by a Japanese Zen master called, I love myself the most. He said, I think it was Soen Roshi. He said, I love myself the most. I hate myself the most. Now, I thought that was perfect. That's the small mind, right, at work. I love myself the most, I hate myself the most. You know, we can imagine ourselves in a way that will make everything we are distasteful to us, yeah? So I mean, we can imagine a person we should have been or should be now, and we can imagine that person, and in every respect we fail to measure up to that, and we can be totally miserable. And I guess sometimes we feel we have to be like that. But actually that's like the samsara itself, you know. If you're in this other mind, this non-discriminating mind, this connecting mind, you're so happy just to greet the next moment, you know, and you're full of love, or full of loving kindness or compassion. And everything seems connected and alive, and even yourself, you might even like yourself. You know, it's the hardest person to like. The mandala falls apart the minute we fall back into that judging mind. You know, the judging mind. It's like magic. You know, it's like bad magic, you know. The beauty of zazen is that it can lift us out of that fantasy mind. You know, imagining what something should be is pure fantasy. And I do it too, right? I mean, I do it too. Imagining how something should be, you know, wanting a certain outcome and then it doesn't appear is totally unproductive, and it's totally illusory, because what you want isn't going to happen. And there's a part of us that just goes, no, I want it to happen, I want it to happen, it should have happened, why didn't it happen? And then we can get really depressed, you know. But the truth is, you know, it's not going to happen. It didn't happen, and it's not going to, you know. So, you know, the other mind is so much happier, and so much healthier, and more open. This koan is about a person who makes a mistake in speaking, see? A monk said to Umon, the brilliance of the Buddha silently illuminates the whole universe. This monk comes up to Master Cloud Gate and he starts reciting this beautiful poem. And Cloud Gate cuts him off and says, hey, those aren't your words, those are somebody else's words, aren't they? And the guy goes, well, yes, those are the words of Chosetsu, the genius. Wouldn't you like to be known as Chosetsu, the genius? That's a pretty high compliment. They say that about Einstein, right? Einstein, the genius, you know, the genius. Yeah. But most of us don't get that after our names, right? Aren't those words of Chosetsu, the genius? Yes, they are, answered the monk. He said, you have slipped up in your speaking, says the monk. So the monk might go away thinking, oh, what an asshole I am. What an idiot. You see, I've really screwed up. I was trying to impress Uma, and now I've made the worst possible impression. And not only that, but I'm not like, I'm no Chosetsu the genius, you know? I'm a dope, you know, I'm no good. I've let everybody down, right? You know? So he walks away thinking, what a worthless piece of crap. Basically, the question is, afterward, Shinshin Zenji brought up the matter and said, tell me, at what point did the monk err in his speaking? Now, this koan is often misunderstood as teaching you that you should have an original response, not a response ripped off from somebody else, basically. We had a party in our sangha in Seattle once, sometimes we have had parties where everybody, we have like a little talent show at the end. Well, we also had a talent show at our sangha in Seattle. And basically my friend Bill Kugler stood up and he recited this poem. And at the end of the recitation, Genki actually said, that was a nice poem, but it would have been better to hear one of your own. And he didn't mean it as a slap, but Bill was crestfallen, you know. And it was just like this koan, you know. So many people think that if the monk had recited something of his own, that would have been a better answer. But this is really not about that, right? You know, because, you know, even if he had recited a poem of his own, you know, Uman could have said, well, that's not as good as the genius would have done a much better poem than you, you know. You know, it's kind of cruel of Uman to do this, but what he's trying to help the monk see is that don't be in that mindset, that judging mindset, you know. Don't be in that judging mindset. That is not a truthful mind. It's a fantasy mind. And I do it too. I mean, I do it too, you know. You can't, you know, when you say, why isn't reality the way I would like it to be? You're in a fantasy. It's like a terrible, 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 destructive fantasy. Because it's not, you know. And in fact, it's not the way anybody planned it out, you know. Even Chosetsu the genius is probably unhappy with himself. In fact, maybe he blew his brains out, you know, I mean, for all we know. So the mind that says this moment is not the moment that should be here is a delusional mind. It's like a mentally ill mind. And it's a common mental illness, you know. But we should try not to fall into it if we can help it. And when we come to Sashin, by the way, everything in our culture encourages us to fall into that mental illness. Absolutely. I mean, basically, you know, imagine if you were the same age as Bill Gates, and you got in the ground floor of the computer industry, and you started a computer company called Macro Hard. There was Microsoft and Macro Hard, right? And he started his in Seattle, and you started yours in San Diego, right? And you know, and flash forward 40 years, and you have a suite of offices in San Diego, and he has an industrial park in Seattle, right? And it's possible if you're that guy whose name might be instead of Bill Gates, it might be Bob Waits, right? Okay? It's possible to hang yourself, right? You know, and just go, oh my God, you know, where did I go wrong, you know, with my life? That's, you know, if you want to be miserable, please think that way. But really, I mean, you know, Bill Gates is a genius, I guess, you know, but actually, you know, a lot of what happens in life is beyond our control, you know. I mean, basically, a lot of what happens in life is just beyond our control. Really and truly, it's fantasy to think that we can make things happen. Now, this isn't fatalism, it's just truth. You know, so, you know, there's a more honest mind that says, look, there's a lot in life I can't control. And so the question is not, how to resent my life because it hasn't turned out the way I want, a better way of dealing with reality would be to say, how can I greet the next moment in the most creative and constructive way, you know? And that would be with accepting mind, right? Accepting mind. You know, this also goes for interactions with other people, right? During sesshin, especially on like day two or sometimes day three, the behavior of other people can be very annoying for some reason, right? It can just happen that way. That the behavior of others can be annoying, you know? I remember, in our sangha in Seattle, there were people get into arguments during sesshin over things like how to rinse the dishes, you know, and things like that. And it'd be really heated arguments. And it's because people would come to sometimes with sesshin with such high expectations, you know, of perfection, you know. Everybody wanted everybody wanted like perfection, you know, and basically they would fight over how to rinse the dishes. So there's also, you just have to do a lot of zazen and get into this non-discriminating mind and then just be in the moment and eventually, even if somebody's breathing too hard or something like that, you can just be, oh, it doesn't matter, you know, it's all rice for me to eat, you know. Now I don't always get in that state myself, you know, but when I do get in there, I'm really happy, and when I'm not in there, I can be quite, you know, unhappy. So better to be happy than unhappy, all things considered. And sesshin is this wonderful opportunity to be happy. And by the way, you don't owe it to the world to be unhappy. That is a real, you know, the older I get, the more I dislike the Puritans, you know, who founded the United States. I really don't like those guys. You know, they were really bad, you know. And because they really felt, you know, if you were happy, that was wrong. You know, you're not supposed to be happy. You're supposed to be discontent, you know. And that's just really a bad scene, as we used to say in the 60s, you know. It's better to be happy. You know, it's easier to be kind when you're happy. It's easier to be generous and so on and so on. And I think happiness is really what life is all about. I really do. I mean, what's the point, you know, if it's not to be happy? And it's not selfish to want to be happy. Generally, people who are genuinely happy want happiness for others too. You know, it's often the case. You know, I think true happiness means you're not even content unless other people are happy too. You want everybody to be where you are because it's so nice, you know. So here we are at sesshin. Some of you are just starting out. And this is day one for you, and it's a challenging day. And day two will be challenging too, but maybe by the end of the day, you know, you'll begin to enter this mind, this beautiful mind, this non-judging mind. And coming to sesshin, even for a weekend, is so important because it's clearing away those obstacles and practicing the way, you could say, is like retraining your mind to be in the moment, you know. There's nothing like sesshin, you know, this sustained practice for many hours a day. It reinvigorates those neural pathways, you know. This is like the art, meditation, you could say, is the art of happiness, really. And so we're here to remind ourselves how to be happy, because our culture doesn't teach happiness at all, you know. But it's great. It's impossible to overrate it. You know, happiness is just great. So, Here we are. Beautiful, beautiful day. Wonderful people, right? We all have our annoying imperfections, including me, you know. And yet, you know, I'm so happy. Even I'm happy. Even I'm here, you know, actually, and I'm very happy you're here. And it couldn't be better, right? I mean, good people who want to be compassionate, people who want to be awake and kindly, together, under one roof, you know, doing zazen, practicing the Buddha's way, cultivating a kind heart and awakened mind. You know, this is, it doesn't get any better than this. And by the way, you know, Imtiaz is here. Cooking is incredible. It's like incredible. You know, the best. We all suffered a little bit last time, you know? But this time it's like the Mount Everest. You know? Oh, really? I mean, I've never had eggplant so good in my life. You know? Never in my life. You know? Sukh Sagar has nothing on us. No question. A monk said to Umong, "The brilliance of the Buddha silently illuminates the whole universe." But before he could finish the verse, Umong said, "Aren't those the words of Chosetsu, the genius?" "Yes, they are," answered the monk. "You slipped up in your speaking," Umong said. Afterward, Shishin Zenji brought up the matter and said, "Tell me, at what point did the monk err in his speaking?" Umong's comment, "If you clearly understood this and realized how exacting Umong was in his method," see, that's, don't be exacting, you know, in the way you might think. Don't be critical, be connected. And what made the monk err in his if you understand this, you are qualified to be the teacher of heaven and earth. If you are not yet clear about it, you are far from saving yourself. A line is cast in the rapids, the greedy will be caught. Before you start to open your mouth, your life has already been lost. That's the best, you know. It's like, you know, I screw up all the time. I screw up all the time. And if I expect myself to be perfect, then I'm just going to be miserable because I can't stop screwing up, you know. So I did my best, I did my best. And then, you know, basically, why not just be a happy idiot, you know? I mean, why not? And that means going to deep mushin, you know, stay in the moment, and everything is beautiful. And you have a loving heart. And the world is this beautiful living, this is a beautiful living being, the world. So let's be happy idiots together.
Shujo Hanse Gando Bodamu Jinse
Today's Teisho will be on Case 39, A Mistake in Speaking. A monk said to Umon, "The brilliance of the Buddha silently illuminates the whole universe." But before he could finish the verse, Umon said, "Aren't those the words of Chosetsu the genius?" "Yes, they are," answered the monk. "You have slipped up in your speaking," Umon said. Afterward, Shinshin Zenji brought up the matter and said, "Tell me, at what point did the monk err in his speaking?" Umon's comment: if you clearly understand this and realize how exacting Umon was in his method, and what made the monk err in his speaking, you are qualified to be a teacher of heaven and earth. If you are not yet clear about it, you are far from saving even yourself. Mumon's verse, a line is cast in the rapids. The greedy will be caught. Before you start to open your mouth, your life is already lost. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming. It was wonderful last night to see some of you arrive. And I was noticing as people came into the Zendo. And it's, you know, personally exciting for me to see people come to Sesshin. I feel somebody who runs a bakery, right? And I have these pastries, and I'm waiting for somebody to come and eat the pastries. And the pastries are zazen, obviously. When people come and go, "Oh, what delicious pastry!" You know, I'm very happy. You know, zazen has helped me a great deal in my life. I can't really describe how wonderful it's been. I'm happy to see other people enjoy it also. It's really like a deep sharing, you know, really beautiful experience for me. I have had a really good sesshin, and I have to tell you, day one I came, And probably like many of you, I was a little bit harried, you know. I had on Friday to try to get all my, I'm an English teacher, so I had to get a bunch of my papers graded because they're due on Tuesday. So I worked really furiously trying to get these papers graded. Sometimes I think I work harder grading the papers than some of my students worked on the papers, you know. But still, I have some students who are really wonderful, and they're all wonderful in their way. Don't get me wrong, but some of them didn't work that hard. I worked very diligently on Friday and Thursday also, trying to get everything ready for the sesshin. And then I had a bunch of meetings on Monday. I graded papers also over the weekend, you know, so that's the English teacher's life. So I worked really hard Thursday, Friday. We had a Saturday sit on Saturday. We had a lovely lunch at Thai Basil, delicious. And that was a very lovely day. And then I went home and I had to do some report. I had to do a report that was due before I left. So you get the idea. Grading papers, doing report. I had a bunch of meetings, and then on Tuesday, you know, I have to, you know, not that I mind, but I have to do grocery shopping. I have to do all this stuff getting ready for sesshin. And so you know, coming down here, I was trying to remember if I'd forgotten something. Work, or if I've forgotten something for the sesshin. Sometimes I've forgotten things, you know. One time I got down here and we didn't have any umeboshi or any pickles, you know. The umeboshi is the dried plum that we use for dried plum tea, and it has quite a good therapeutic property. It's the most alkaline food known to humans in the world, really. It's the most. So apparently when you dry plums like that, they become alkaline, and they and we make tea out of it, and it settles people's stomachs. When I was training, I used to drink it, and it would just be make my stomach so calm. And so it's like magic. And then the pickles, we need those to clean the bowls. So I remember once forgetting those, and I called my wife up, and she FedExed the pickles. And really? And, like, thank God they're here, you know. So I always forget something, you know. And either on my work, I must confess, on Wednesday I called my secretary, and we went through the emails because I was waiting to get, you know. So this is life. Right, this is life, and yet, you know, it can become so all-consuming. You know, it's just this relentless, this relentless tasks to do, and they never stop. And in fact, you know, you can have a lot of joy in doing your work. You know, I actually enjoy my work, but you know, if I just did nothing but work, after a while, it would get stale, and also, it would be hard to be fresh, to have new ideas, and I just think I would get really burned out. I have a job where it's possible to get a little bit burned out, you know. Coming to Sesshin for me is a wonderful experience. It's like purifying body, heart, and mind, and it's so renewing. I'm not boasting or something, but, driving down here, I had a lot of stuff on my plate. And when I got here, like everybody else, I think, you know, boy, I've got a lot of stuff on my plate. You know, this is, and I might even feel a little guilty, you know, because I'm taking time off to come to Sesshin. I could be doing this. I could be doing that. As soon as I get here, I feel better because I've had so many wonderful experiences here. And when I see all of my Dharma brothers and sisters, all the people I practice with, my friends, I feel happy, you know. And then day one is a challenge, you know, for me. I sit there, and at times, I have to confess, it's not like it used to be, but sometimes I will think, you know, about this deadline or this, you know, why did he say that? Or, you know, so I too spend day one sort of sometimes going through events of my busy life. Day two though, like everybody else, you know, my legs get tired. I begin to feel, really getting tired by the end of day two. The last sit of the evening on day two is a challenge for me too, you know. I'm in there doing Dokusan, and I want to be on for everybody. I want to pay attention. It's very important to be focused. And yet I'm often tired, you know. Day two, sometimes I'll go to bed and I can't wait to get to sleep, you know. This time I didn't do that. I actually did extra zazen. I actually stayed up on day two and did an extra hour of zazen. And when I got up on day three, all I can tell you, and this is the truth, you know, the truth, is that it was so beautiful. It was like everything was sacred, alive, moving, beautiful. And my heart was just like pumping compassion, you know. In the afternoon on the third day of my Sesshin, I was thinking about my old friend Larry Sullivan, And I realized what a good friend he was to me. You know, we were college buddies and we went hiking and I was his best man at his wedding, but over time we kind of lost touch. And I felt so sorry about that. And I realized how much I loved him. And I almost was going to call him yesterday. Just on my, but then I thought, well, I'll wait until Monday. But I'm going to call him on Monday and just say, I love you, man. You know? And he's going to go, what the hell? I haven't heard from you in 20 years, you know? You crazy guy. But it's all right, you know. I realized I really want to try to rekindle my friendship with him, you know. Well, I feel, you know, I felt like, what the hell did I, why did I let him slip away? You know, he was such a beautiful human being. And he certainly, you know, why did I do that? You know, how callous of me, you know. And I have to say, you know, I've been on the other end of this too. You know, when Dokusan people will come in on the third day of Sesshin and they'll say, you know, one guy, long ago, you know, he had a difficult upbringing, and his father, you could say, was like an abusive parent, and he came into Dokusan and he was just sobbing, and he said, I was mean to my dog. You know, I was mean to my dog. And yeah, I just thought, you know, Sesshin is like a miracle, right? You know, because it's so easy to be hard-hearted. You know, we don't live in a particularly compassionate society. We just don't, you know. There are societies where people are compassionate, more compassionate than ours. It's just a fact, you know. I was just reading this book, a wonderful book called The Spirit Level. And they were looking at societies around the world where people have the highest levels of mental health and happiness. And those societies tend to be very equal. There's not huge gaps between rich and poor. People are pretty much all equal. And so there's a lot, high degree of levelness in the society, and also there's a great deal of community closeness and those sorts of things. And believe it or not, the country that scores highest on most of those measures is Japan. Japan has a lot of problems, but it's a very equal society, and they actually have very low rates of mental illness, and they have the longest life expectancy. So, you know, guess what's on the other side, you know? No, but it's very important, you know. The United States is at the other extreme of the developed nations. We're the most isolated. We have high rates of mental illness and disorders, like anxiety-type disorders. And we also have one of the highest rates of child mortality, you know. So it's like the unequal and the equal, and they have a continuum. There's countries in the middle, but we don't live in a very compassionate society. And you know, as I drove to Sesshin, I was listening on the radio to the news of the war, and you think, wait a minute, which war? You know. All my life, America's been at war, you know, Vietnam. We were at war in Nicaragua, basically. We were at war with Iraq. You know, we are in war in Iraq, Afghanistan. So, you know, it's possible to live your life and be rather happy, but there's like you're working in a system which isn't particularly healthy for you, and so it's very good, you know, to come to Sesshin, and you can. I think that what we create here, really is like a mandala, right? This is like a sacred space where we can be sane, and we can be compassionate. And experience life in a different way, and You know, if there's enough mandalas, maybe the society will change. But you know, I think it's very difficult to change a society from the top down. I think that doesn't work very well. You know, people have to have a different heart. And so, you know, when you come to Sesshin, even though you have to push away all the busyness and all the craziness to get here, you know, I think around day three, you're going to feel a lot better. You're going to be a lot happier. And yesterday, for me, was just like heaven. It was just like being absolutely in heaven. And as I say, I was, you know, everything, Sound of a Bird was almost heartbreakingly beautiful. And I was thinking about my friend Larry and what a jerk I was not to keep in touch. And I really am going to call him when Sesshin is over and tell him I love him. And he really won't know what to do with that, you know. But I should not, you know, I realize, you know, I realize that life is very precious. It's here and then it's gone. And everybody around us is very precious, you know. And that recognition is very much about what Zen is about. Experiencing your connectedness to things, the preciousness of the people in your life. And so, you know, that's a successful sesshin, you know, basically. That's Buddha mind, you know, is that loving kindness mind. And then the question is, you know, how to integrate that with our daily lives and go back into that crazy society. But this is really like a mandala. What we create here is a mandala. And people come and they're transformed by it. You know, like people who come here have good intentions. You know, people who want to be better people come to Sesshin. People who want to change their lives come to Sesshin. And Sesshin is like a big machine for purifying body, heart, and mind and producing Buddhas. Buddhas are people who are capable of unconditional love for other human beings. And that is the goal of our practice. So it's not, as I've often said, the goal of our practice is not just Daikensho. It's not just, Daikensho is like the first awakening to a different kind of mind. You know, the first dramatic awakening to this different kind of mind. And then basically, it's from there we keep going back to that beautiful, radiant awareness, sesshin after sesshin after sesshin, and we keep integrating more and more, hopefully, of our life into the mandala. And it can't be done by one person. It has to be done, you know. One of the other things I was thinking about during sesshin yesterday was I was at such peace, and I felt so happy, and I felt like the deepest kind of peace, like the deepest kind of, like I was being held in the arms of my mother or being held in the arms of the universe, and there was no way I was going to drop, you know. And I thought, you know, I used to feel that way when I was sitting next to Genki Roshi and Glenn. That, you know, I have some of the best, those moments were so beautiful, where I was just sitting in the Zendo next to my two teachers. And I felt so, I think in my life I've rarely felt so happy and so safe and so connected to things, you know. There's a few other times in my life where I've had that feeling to the same degree. But you know, sesshin is really special. I think that is reality, you know, personally. I mean, there are people who would hear me say all this and think, well, this is crazy, you know. It's dog eat dog, blah, blah, blah. And those people often are in powerful positions in our society. But nevertheless, you know, I think that they're in an illusion, you know. And that the reality is this beautiful connectedness, this beautiful, this sense of being at home in the universe, being at home in the world. And, And yesterday, I felt this very powerfully for hour after hour. And this is why I like sesshin so much, you know. And it really will help me to go back and be a better person in my life and value the people I care about. And value the people I haven't cared about and remember them, you know. So this is really beautiful. And if you ask, you know, how does it happen? You know, how does this happen? It's really complicated. You know, how does this transformation happen? But I think one of the key elements is that you're not processing information with your small mind. See? This is very important, you know, not processing with the small mind. There's a mind which is a judging mind, you know, it's a judging mind. And it has expectations about what should be the case. And I have this mind too. That's why I come to sesshin. You know, the Dalai Lama is far, I'm quite sure the Dalai Lama is far in advance of me in his practice, I would guess. But the Dalai Lama still gets up every day and does 4 hours of meditation every morning. And he's actually been increasing it. It used to be like 3. You can say, well, what the hell? He's the Dalai Lama. You know, why does he need to meditate? But, you know, the Dalai Lama has been in negotiations with the Chinese, and they've been very difficult to work with, the mainland Chinese. And they're trying to basically get him over a barrel, and he's been fighting for 30 years for his country, to save his country and his culture. And, you know, even the Dalai Lama must have to do a lot of zazen in order not to get down in the dumps, you know? Because, you know, you would be crazy, in a certain sense, you know, not to be alarmed sometimes by things that go on in the world. I mean, if you were always just like in a state of bliss, you know, you know, that would be kind of weird, wouldn't it? I mean, if you were just like, you know, a nuclear bomb just blew up the city. Oh well, you know, it's all illusion. That would be weird, I think, and not healthy, and not truthful, and also not awake. So I mean, suffering of people is real suffering, and being aware of it is part of being like awake, you know, because we suffer and we don't want to. You know, we don't like to suffer, and in fact, if you meditate long enough, you become rather hypersensitive to the suffering of others. You really don't want them to be unhappy, you know. So you know, being honest about the state of the world is part of living this path. You know, it's not a healthy world. You know, it's not a so it can be overwhelming. If you don't have tools and if you don't have resources. And one of my resources is zazen and also, sesshin. And I come here and I find this like, indestructible compassion, where I would least expect it, you know, in myself, you know. And, you know, I'm just, you know, I, one of the things I was thinking about the other day was what a jerk I was when I was a teenager, you know. I was a really, kind of a big jerk, you know. And I realized, boy, I don't think I would have liked myself very much if I ran, you know, if I could run into my teenage self, I would think, ugh, you know, what a creep, you know. So I'm glad I'm not that person anymore, you know. Anyway, I also though can look at that person and you know, with a, you know, a sort of like loving heart, even, you know. Well, the point is that this is my way of dealing with life, is to come here and get in touch with this compassion. And even though I started my life as kind of a jerk, this compassion is present even in me, you know, I'm happy to say. And that's a real surprise, and a really great gift, undeserved gift. So when I sit on the cushion, day three of Sashin, and this boundless love and compassion arises, you know, that's really wonderful. And everything becomes like golden, like this beautiful world has become so precious. And this is a Buddha mind. And it's so wonderful to be able to share it with others. And you can't, you know, you need a structure like Sashin, and you need, it helps to have people you can share these experiences with, you know. What gets in the way, though, often is that little mind, that judging mind that has expectations, and that is kind of like a cynical little mind, sort of a embittered little mind, or just a judging mind, you know. Strangely, your beautiful mandala can be destroyed very easily if you fall back into that consciousness. It's very interesting, you know, how quickly the universe melts back into samsara if you fall back into the judging mind, you know. This is going to happen, you know, it happens, you know. You have a wonderful sit, and then basically want another wonderful sit just like that one, and it doesn't happen, and then you think, well, this is crap, you know, or I'm no good, you know, and this, why can't I have another sit? And then you get bummed out, and by the end of the day, you're really in a very negative state of mind, you know. And you think, how did I get from paradise to hell in about 6 hours? And there's a mindset which wants, you know, the beauty of Sashin is that you come to Sashin, and by about day two, all you care about is just surviving, right? It's like, you might come to Sashin thinking, I want enlightenment, I want to be the Buddha, blah, blah, blah. By day two, it's just like, let me just get through the next 5 minutes, you know, without shrieking or without crying, you know. And you go deep into your breath, and you go deep into mushin, into shunyata. This is very purifying, because after a while, you know, you're no longer attached to any kind of outcome. You're just present in the moment with a kind of spotless mind. And then everything comes alive, everything comes alive. But the minute we start measuring and expecting and caring and comparing and so on and so on, our paradise falls apart again, you know. And it's a different mindset, you know. Strangely, the mind that is able to experience wholeness is the mind that can accept imperfection. Isn't that interesting? That the mind that is most capable of experiencing wholeness is the mind that is most able to embrace imperfection. Imperfection. In other words, when you're in that state of discriminating mind, you have all kinds of likes and dislikes and all kinds of expectations. And when things don't go your way, you get disappointed, angry, self-loathing arises, fear. When you're in the second day of Sashin mind, all you care about is getting through the next 5 minutes, and you're just in the moment, in the moment, in the moment. And then, you know, there's a certain mentality where anything that arises is part of a greater whole, and you feel it in your bones, you know. This is experiencing the world through like samadhi, you know. This morning somebody was breathing kind of heavily in the zendo, and about 4 people came up and said, "Was it me?" And I said, "I don't know, you know." So somebody was doing it, right? Another, I also said, "Don't move." And somebody came up, about 3 people came up and goes, how did you see, you know, or, you know. So. But you know, if you're in the right state of mind, and if you're in the right state of mind, even if you're sitting next to somebody who's going, you know, even that can be beautiful. You know, even that can be deeply touching. You know, now I'm not if you're not at that state, I'm not criticizing anybody. But there's a kind of a mind which isn't a judging mind. You know, it's an embracing mind. There's a different kinds of intelligence, different kinds of awareness. There's a kind of awareness which is an embracing awareness, and it's not self-centered. And it's not anchored. It's flowing, you know. And then there's a mind that is so hard to get out of without zazen, you know, which is the judging mind, you know. And by the way, we're generally the harshest judges of ourselves, right? In other words, even though other people might bother us, typically the person we like the least is ourselves. You know, there's a wonderful saying by a Japanese Zen master called, I love myself the most. He said, I think it was Soen Roshi. He said, I love myself the most. I hate myself the most. Now, I thought that was perfect. That's the small mind, right, at work. I love myself the most. I hate myself the most. You know, we can imagine ourselves in a way that will make everything we are distasteful to us. Yeah. So we can imagine a person we should have been or should be now, and we can imagine that person, and in every respect we fail to measure up to that, and we can be totally miserable. And I guess sometimes we feel we have to be like that. But actually that's like samsara itself, you know. If you're in this other mind, this non-discriminating mind, this connecting mind, you're so happy just to greet the next moment, you know, and you're full of love, or full of loving kindness or compassion. And everything seems connected and alive, and even yourself. You might even like yourself. You know, it's the hardest person to like. The mandala falls apart the minute we fall back into that judging mind. You know, the judging mind. It's like magic, you know, it's like bad magic, you know. The beauty of zazen is that it can lift us out of that fantasy mind. You know, imagining what something should be is pure fantasy. And I do it too, right? I mean, I do it too. Imagining how something should be, you know, wanting a certain outcome and then it doesn't appear, is totally unproductive, and it's totally illusory, because what you want isn't going to happen. And you just, there's a part of us that just goes, no, I want it to happen, I want it to happen, it should have happened, why didn't it happen? And then we can get really depressed, you know. But the truth is, you know, it's not going to happen. It didn't happen, and it's not going to, you know. So, you know, the other mind is so much happier, and so much healthier, and more open. This koan is about a person who makes a mistake in speaking, see? A monk said to Umon, the brilliance of the Buddha silently illuminates the whole universe. This monk comes up to Master Cloud Gate and he starts reciting this beautiful poem. And Cloud Gate cuts him off and says, hey, those aren't your words, those are somebody else's words, aren't they? And the guy goes, well, yes, those are the words of Chosetsu, the genius. Wouldn't you like to be known as Chosetsu, the genius? That's a pretty high compliment. Now, you say that about Einstein, right? Einstein, the genius, you know, the genius. You know? But most of us don't get that after our names, right? Aren't those words of Chosetsu, the genius? Yes, they are, answered the monk. He said, you have slipped up in your speaking, says the monk. So the monk might go away thinking, oh, what an asshole I am, what an idiot. You see, I've really screwed up. I was trying to impress Uma, and now I've made the worst possible impression. And not only that, but I'm not like, I'm no Chosetsu the genius, you know? I'm a dope, you know, I'm no good. I've let everybody down, right? You know? So he walks away thinking, what a worthless piece of crap. Basically, the question is, afterward, Shinshin Zenji brought up the matter and said, tell me, at what point did the monk err in his speaking? Now, this koan is often misunderstood as teaching you that you should have an original response, not a response ripped off from somebody else, basically. We had a party in our sangha in Seattle once, sometimes we have had parties where we have like a little talent show at the end. Well, we also had a talent show at our sangha in Seattle. And basically my friend Bill Kugler stood up and he recited this poem. And at the end of the recitation, Genki actually said, that was a nice poem, but it would have been better to hear one of your own. And he didn't mean it as a slap, but Bill was crestfallen, you know. And it was just like this koan, you know. So many people think that if the monk had recited something of his own, that would have been a better answer. But this is really not about that, right? You know, because, you know, even if he had recited a poem of his own, you know, Uman could have said, well, that's not as good as the genius would have done a much better poem than you, you know. You know, it's kind of cruel of Uman to do this, but what he's trying to help the monk see is that don't be in that mindset, that judging mindset, you know. Don't be in that judging mindset. That is not a truthful mind. It's a fantasy mind. And I do it too. I mean, I do it too, you know. You can't, you know, when you say, why isn't reality the way I would like it to be? You're in a fantasy. It's like a terrible, 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 destructive fantasy. Because it's not, you know. And in fact, it's not the way anybody planned it out, you know. Even Chosetsu the genius is probably unhappy with himself. In fact, maybe he blew his brains out, you know, I mean, for all we know. So the mind that says this moment is not the moment that should be here is a delusional mind. It's like a mentally ill mind. And it's a common mental illness, you know. But we should try not to fall into it if we can help it. And when we come to Sesshin, by the way, everything in our culture encourages us to fall into that mental illness. Absolutely. I mean, basically, you know, imagine if you were the same age as Bill Gates, and you got in the ground floor of the computer industry, and you started a computer company called Macrohard. There was Microsoft and Macrohard, right? And he started his in Seattle, and you started yours in San Diego, right? And, you know, and flash forward 40 years, and you have a suite of offices in San Diego, and he has an industrial park in Seattle, right? And it's possible if you're that guy whose name might be, instead of Bill Gates, it might be Bob Waits, right? Okay? It's possible to hang yourself, right? You know, and just go, oh my God, you know, where did I go wrong, you know, with my life? That's, you know, if you want to be miserable, please think that way. But really, I mean, you know, Bill Gates is a genius, I guess, you know, but actually, you know, a lot of what happens in life is beyond our control, you know. A lot of what happens in life is just beyond our control. Really and truly, it's fantasy to think that we can make things happen. Now, this isn't fatalism, it's just truth. You know, so, you know, there's a more honest mind that says, look, there's a lot in life I can't control. And so the question is not, how to resent my life because it hasn't turned out the way I want, a better way of dealing with reality would be to say, how can I greet the next moment in the most creative and constructive way, you know? And that would be with accepting mine, right? Accepting mine. You know, this also goes for interactions with other people, right? During Sesshin, especially on like day two or sometimes day three, the behavior of other people can be very annoying for some reason, right? You know, it can just happen that way. That the behavior of others can be annoying, you know? I remember, in our Sangha in Seattle, there were people get into arguments during Sesshin over things like how to rinse the dishes, you know, and things like that. And it'd be really heated arguments. And it's because people would come to sometimes with Sesshin with such high expectations, you know, of perfection, you know. Everybody wanted everybody wanted like perfection, you know, and basically they would fight over how to rinse the dishes. So there's also, you just have to do a lot of zazen and get into this non-discriminating mind and then just be in the moment and eventually, even if somebody's breathing too hard or something like that, it can just be all, it doesn't matter, you know, it's all rice for me to eat, you know. Now, I don't always get in that state myself, you know, but when I do get in there, I'm really happy, and when I'm not in there, I can be quite, you know, unhappy. So better to be happy than unhappy, all things considered. And Sesshin is this wonderful opportunity to be happy. And by the way, you don't owe it to the world to be unhappy. That is a real, you know, the older I get, the more I dislike the Puritans, you know, who founded the United States. I really don't like those guys. You know, they were really bad, you know. And because they really felt, you know, if you were happy, that was wrong. You know, you're not supposed to be happy. You're supposed to be discontent, you know. And that's just really a bad scene, as we used to say in the 60s, you know. It's better to be happy. You know, it's easier to be kind when you're happy. It's easier to be generous and so on and so on. And I think happiness is really what life is all about. I really do. I mean, what's the point, you know, if it's not to be happy? And it's not selfish to want to be happy. Generally, people who are genuinely happy want happiness for others too. You know, it's often the case. You know, I think true happiness means you're not even content unless other people are happy too. You want everybody to be where you are because it's so nice, you know. So here we are at Sesshin. Some of you are just starting out. And this is day one for you, and it's a challenging day. And day two will be challenging too, but maybe by the end of the day, you know, you'll begin to enter this mind, this beautiful mind, this non-judging mind. And coming to Sesshin, even for a weekend, is so important because it's clearing away those obstacles and practicing the way, you could say, is like retraining your mind to be in the moment, you know. There's nothing like Sesshin, you know, this sustained practice for many hours a day. It reinvigorates those neural pathways, you know. And so this is like the art, meditation, you could say, is the art of happiness, really. And so we're here to remind ourselves how to be happy, because our culture doesn't teach happiness at all. You know? But it's great. It's impossible to overrate it. You know, happiness is just great. So Here we are. Beautiful, beautiful day. Wonderful people, right? We all have our annoying imperfections, including me, you know. And yet, you know, I'm so happy. Even I'm happy even I'm here, you know, actually. And I'm very happy you're here. And it couldn't be better, right? I mean, good people who want to be compassionate, people who want to be awake and kindly, together, under one roof, you know, doing zazen, practicing the Buddha's way, cultivating a kind heart and awakened mind. You know, this is, it doesn't get any better than this. And by the way, you know, Imtiaz is here. Cooking is like incredible. It's like incredible. You know, the best. We all suffered a little bit last time, you know? But this time, it's like the Mount Everest. Oh, really? I mean, I've never had eggplant so good in my life. Never in my life. Sukh Sagar has nothing on us. No question. A monk said to Umong, "The brilliance of the Buddha silently illuminates the whole universe." But before he could finish the verse, Umong said, "Aren't those the words of Chosetsu, the genius?" "Yes, they are," answered the monk. "You slipped up in your speaking," Umong said. Afterward, Shishin Zenji brought up the matter and said, "Tell me, at what point did the monk err in his speaking?" Umong's comment, "If you clearly understood this and realized how exacting Umong was in his method," see, that's, don't be exacting. You know, in the way you might think. Don't be critical. Be connected. And what made the monk err in his speech, if you understand this, you are qualified to be the teacher of heaven and earth. If you are not yet clear about it, you are far from saving yourself. A line is cast in the rapids, the greedy will be caught. Before you start to open your mouth, your life has already been lost. That's the best, you know. It's like, you know, I screw up all the time. I screw up all the time. And if I expect myself to be perfect, then I'm, you know, I'm just going to be miserable because I can't stop screwing up, you know. So why, you know, I did my best, And then, you know, basically, why not just be a happy idiot, you know? I mean, why not? And that means go into deep mushin, you know, stay in the moment, and everything is beautiful. And you have a loving heart, and the world is this beautiful living, this is a beautiful living being, the world. So let's try, let's be happy idiots together, okay?